This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. At the start of the new year, for some reason, folks who want to make positive changes in their lives have plenty of motivation. I know I do. But it doesn't take long for that motivation to zero out and those resolutions to tend to fall to the side. There's nothing wrong with you. This is just human nature. Motivation is a limited resource. So then how are we going to get ready for that marathon, finish writing that book, plant the garden, and all those other projects that we had in mind? Well, there are ways to do it that don't seem like work, won't make you feel bad about yourself, and they will get those fantastic goals achieved. We're talking about resolutions and reality today on The Source, and you can call in with your questions and comments. The number is 210-614-8980. What tips, tricks, hacks do you have, and what are your goals for 2019? How are you doing so far? 210-614-8980. And you can also email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at TPR Source. Our guest this hour, we're joined by Ryder Carroll. He's a best-selling author, and he is the creator of the Bullet Journal Method. And Julie Morgenstern is a best-selling author, expert on time management, productivity, and organizing. Her latest book is Time to Parent. She's also the author of Never Check Email in the Morning. It's great to have you both here this afternoon. Julie Morgenstern, let me start off with you. Tell me about how does it usually work with folks with the new year? Why do we have all this energy?
Well, it's a reset moment, and I think we always feel energy around a chance for a fresh start. So the new year is a classic one. We get them at other times in the year, too. We get it at the start of summer. We get it at, you know, back to school. Even if you don't go to school anymore, it's another back to school moment. But it's a chance to sort of give yourself a pass on whatever you achieved or didn't achieve before and have a new window in which to accomplish something.
A lot of people these days sort of run down the idea of New Year's resolutions as if we are setting ourselves up for failure. Is there anything wrong with making New Year's resolutions?
I don't think, if you think of it as just another opportunity to set some goals, some measurable goals for yourself for a short time, though. I mean, I think New Year, it's a long period of time to sustain something. But it's a great new energy and a great fresh start. So maybe you set some goals for the first quarter, and it's for the first 3 months. And then you can set new goals for the next 3 months and the next 3 months. But the whole thing can be tied together with a theme. I think themes are a better approach. It's not that you're going to exercise. Like, exercising is an activity. It's not really a goal. It's an activity that has a purpose, and that purpose is you want to get healthy. You want to be healthy or live a healthy lifestyle. You can carry that theme through the year, but manifest it with different kinds of activities along the way. So the theme is easier, or the overarching intention is easier to sustain than very concrete actions that can vary up as the year progresses.
So there are ways to create systems that will help us still keep going to the gym or do all these other things that we want to do for the new year, throughout the year. You don't have to set yourself up for failure. There are ways of actually being consistent and hitting all those marks, right?
And hitting the marks and feeling just, you know, using it as a chance to sort of infuse new behaviors and new rewards into your life. Yeah, it doesn't have to be set up for failure.
So, Ryder Carroll, you created the bullet journal method. Bullet journaling is huge these days. Can you give me just a quick synopsis on what makes a bullet journal?
Well, it really depends on the user. So what I teach is basically a foundation. It's the user that brings the purpose to the bullet journal. The idea of the bullet journal is that it provides a platform that encourages self-learning, essentially, where you start to develop the system based on what you need and that you change that system as your needs change. So it evolves with you. you can think of it as kind of like a Lego set where every single piece serves a very specific purpose, and those pieces can be rearranged and you can add new pieces. So some person might use it to, for example, track a goal, and other people might use it to plan a project or, you know, create a fertility tracker. It just depends on the needs of the individual user.
So it has all this flexibility built into it, but there are some innovations that you have added to it. People who have been journaling forever, you know, Leonardo da Vinci and Ben Franklin, they were fantastic journalers. But being able to do things like the index part of it that you have added seems to bring a lot more form and structure to a bullet journal, so it helps many people keep track of what it is they're trying to do.
Yeah, so as I'd mentioned, there's Lego pieces, and we refer to those as collections, and there are four core collections, one of which is the index, which is essentially a place that allows you to keep track of all your content within your bullet journal. Well, bullet journal can be a sketchbook, it can be a diary, it can be anything you want it to be, and I always found it really difficult to find what I wrote down, you know, like what page were my goals on, that kind of thing. Index keeps track of all your content, and then you have a daily log, which is basically there to help you declutter your mind on a daily basis by writing out your thoughts as short-form bullets that are categorized with different kinds of symbols, so that we have tasks, events, and notes. So the idea is that you're capturing your thoughts on paper on an ongoing basis, but it doesn't require as much time as traditional journaling does. So that's what the daily log is for, and then you have the monthly log, which basically helps you take a step back from your life and think about why you're doing what you're doing, what your priorities are for that month, and also go through all of your lists to make sure that the things you're working on still matter and are still relevant. The whole idea of the bullet journal is that you're trying to work on as few things as possible and have the most amount of time to do it. So you're curating your lists on an ongoing basis. And then you have the future log, which allows you to do future planning and forward planning. Because unlike a traditional planner, the bullet journal isn't very rigid. It evolves alongside its user. So the templates are kept to an absolute minimum, and it allows you to put it down and pick it up whenever you need it. I encourage people to use it every day just to make sure that they continue to capture their experience and record their thoughts so they can study them and learn from them.
And a reflection is a big part of the bullet journal. It's not just a to-do list of being able to scratch off going to the dry cleaners, but also looking back on what it is that you, how you spend your time.
Exactly. I mean, I think a big problem with a standard to-do list is that it can quickly become endless, which was my own problem. I just capture everything, and all of a sudden I had these never-ending to-do lists that were entirely overwhelming and hard to prioritize because I had stretched my attention so thin that everything was a fire drill at that point. So the idea with bullet journaling is that you check in with your lists every day and try to get rid of things that add no value to your life, things that don't matter or aren't vital. And in that process, your lists continue to shrink in size but become ever more targeted. And you're doing that on a daily and a monthly basis.
Okay.
For everything in your bullet journal, something you believe in.
Ryder Carroll is the best-selling author and the creator of the bullet journal method. We're also speaking with Julie Morgenstern. She is a best-selling author, expert on time management. We're talking about getting organized for the new year. 210-614-8980. The source continues after this. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about getting organized, getting motivated, getting focused, getting things done in the new year. What's 2019 going to look like for you? Give us a call. Tell us your goals, your ambitions, 210-614-8980. We've been talking about bullet journaling with Ryder Carroll. We got an email from Denise. She writes, I've taught a few classes to people looking to start a bullet journal with a focus on using journaling for self-care, reflection, and overall health tracking. Next week, I'll be teaching LGBTQIA+ youth on how to start a bullet journal with this focus in mind. My life is significantly less chaotic and stressful since beginning. I have a place to put my thoughts, ideas, and special happenings and notes. I carry it with me everywhere and look forward to journaling every day. Thank you, writer, for creating something so accessible, useful, and joy-enhancing. And that was from Denise. And writer, let's get your reaction.
I couldn't ask for a better email. It's exactly what the intention is. It's trying to figure out what matters to you so that you can lead a more stress-free life with less anxiety, because you're not as distracted all the time as we tend to be very quickly in this day and age.
So you write in your book, The Bullet Journal Method, that you grew up ADHD, dealing with all of the chaos that involves, and I definitely relate to that. But it was through trying to come up with dealing with that, you came up with this method over time.
Yes, yeah. So the bullet journal method did not arrive fully formed. I would look at it as a collection of solutions to my own challenges with focus and precision and just staying on track, right? With ADD, my experience was that my focus was everywhere all the time, so nothing got the attention that it deserved. And over time, I just started to design solutions that worked the way that my mind worked and refined them over 20 years to finally put it together in this toolkit that I called the Bullet Journal Method.
And Julie Morgenstern, you also write quite a bit about assessments, self-assessments, and why is that important?
Well, I think that time management and organizing challenges, we can all feel chaotic and we can all feel distracted and we can all feel like we're off track. So that is very, very universal. But exactly what that's keeping you from achieving and what you really want to use your time for, that's going to vary from person to person. And even within a person, it varies as your life evolves. It varies. It can vary throughout the year. It can vary throughout, you know, your career, as you're raising a family. So self-assessments are really important to just step back and actually get precise, so that you can start to fix the problems. When I do time management work with people, there's a series of assessment questions, but the ones that really, like if you distill it down, I ask people to just define what are you spending too much time on and what are you not spending enough time on, and be very concrete about that. And then the next step is to work on processes and systems to shrink the amount of time you're spending on the things that are taking too much of your time, and then build in time for the things that you want to spend your time on. Because if we don't carve out time, specific time, for the things that are important to us that we want to do, the time will not materialize. It doesn't happen in our spare time, like self-care or connecting with others, or you mentioned, you know, writing that novel or whatever your goals are. A to-do that's not connected to a when rarely gets done. So those are two really concrete levers that I think can help people just titrate their year right now. What are you spending too much time on? Many people will say things like either logistics related to my life, like bill paying and making sure there's food in the house and, you know, the dry cleaning, it gets dropped off and the laundry is done, that sort of logistical administrivia of life. And what are you not spending enough time on? The universal things that come up most often are not enough time on me, like my own creativity, my own relaxation, and not enough time on relationships. So you can just literally work on streamlining the administrivia of your life with systems. We can talk about those. And then you literally build in routine time for self-care and routine time and systems for relationship building.
So, Julie, when people say, like, who am I, then I should be able to look at how I've spent my time. And that will tell you more about me than anything else, right?
Well, I think that tells something. I do think that how we spend our time is how we spend our life. And that can actually get people like a real reaction when I do time management speeches. Like, you gotta, when you talk about time, people get really serious. They feel really badly. They feel that they're spending time on not the things that are the most important to them, but are the most urgent or the most important to somebody else. And sometimes how you're spending your time is more a reflection on that you don't either feel entitled to invest time in yourself or the things that are important to you, or it's very hard for you to say no to others. I think that's what happens when there is a disconnect between how you're spending your time and what you really want to spend your time on. It's a difficulty saying no to your boss, to your family, to your friends, to people. And I think that gets more to the heart of it. And you can always make adjustments. You actually can. And honestly, when we do coaching and, you know, we coach people to, like, have those difficult conversations, whether it's to a boss or a family, like, I can't do that, or I need to invest my time here, so I can't do that. 99% of the time, those conversations go so much better than people expect. So they're just like, oh my God, they were so understanding. They don't want me stressing out either, or he doesn't want me working till midnight anyway. They're worried about me burning out. And so it's really, I think, a big piece of it is learning how to say no to the things that don't meet your goals and don't help you contribute to your work or your family life or your own happiness, to make the space for the things that really matter. And it's easier than you think. People are more, believe it or not, they'll take whatever you give them, but if you say, you know what, I'm at my limit, they're like, okay, I get it. I have my limits too. And they'll do a workaround.
But Ryder Carroll, with the bullet journal, if people are doing tracking where they're spending their time, how their work is progressing, if they're hitting, you know, getting closer to their goals, then they're able to deal with this hindsight bias that we all have. Everyone's going to think that, you know, I look, oh yeah, I'm spending plenty of time volunteering. I'm spending plenty of time doing all these reading. But in actuality, if I'm keeping track of that stuff, really not so much. I mean, is that a benefit of the bullet journaling, being able to get out of the self-deception and being able to see where am I really spending my time?
Yes, exactly. I mean, it's easy to convince ourselves of pretty much any story we want to tell ourselves. And the idea of writing things down gives you a very clear way of seeing whether or not that story is true. Have you been on that diet for a month or 2 weeks, right? When you write it down, you will know. And that's a way that you can measure your progress as well. How long have I been doing this? Have I been doing it long enough to actually see a difference? What is that difference? How do I feel now as I did then? The idea is that you're constantly checking in with yourself to make sure that, A, you're being honest with yourself, either in a positive or a negative way, right? Maybe you've been on this diet much longer than you feel like you have, or much less time, but that information is valuable. Like, it gives you context that you need, because our memories are terrible. So writing things down and just seeing it clearly can help you stay on track.
It's interesting all the different tracker methods that people have come up with, and you have some in your book for things like make your bed, reflection, meditate, you know, a lot of things people want to keep track of.
Yeah, I mean, I think overall the idea is to be able to make progress in your own story, right? Like, I agree with the idea of time, you know, being something that we give away too often. The way I like to see it is that time can't be made. It can only be taken, right? And it can either be taken from us or it can be taken by us. So a lot of times tracking it is a way that we take time back. And, you know, a lot of those trackers are actually paired with people scheduling that time somewhere. They carve out the time in their day. And if they fail to do that, then they'll know, because they're keeping track of it. And you can keep track of pretty much everything. I just think we have to be careful of tracking too many things. because if we try to form too many habits at the same time, the chances of us changing our behavior is a lot lower.
Absolutely. But so Julie Morgenstern, you also talk about balancing your balance. What does that mean?
Well, I think for people who work, the concept of work-life balance can become a little bit too overly simplified, in that any time they're not working is considered balance, their time off. But our time off really requires, it has different components that all need to be nourished and fed. So there's in the new book Time to Parent, which actually applies to all humans, it's really much more about being a human and what does it take to be a human in terms of time and energy. There's an acronym in there called Fueling Yourself, S-E-L-F, and there's four activities that actually fuel us, and sleep being one, sleep and rest and naps, exercise being the next, love being the third, which is, you know, relationships with others, and fun, which is our passions or our hobbies or the things that when we spend time on them, we just feel like us, like this makes me feel like me. Sleep, exercise, love, fun, spells an acronym SELF, as in fueling yourself. And you need to balance your time off among a variety of those. That if in all your time off, all you do is sleep, you're not going to feel fulfilled and energized or whole. If in all your time off, you spend it just on relationships but not on exercise and not on your own fun, you're going to feel depleted. So balancing your time off among the variety of things that fuel different parts of you, I have found, makes you feel more whole, more energized, more refreshed, more renewed for work, and really it's sort of refueled in a way that enables you to be at peak performance even on your job.
And do you think people need to have this information brought to them, that if you don't tell them, they don't know this instinctively?
I think people are so overwhelmed so often, and do feel often that taking time for themselves just feels like they're stealing it from somebody. I do think that they can get myopic, or they can just spend their time off on one thing and just sort of steal that time and not really embrace that work-life balance. They feel they're taking it from their job. Certainly the clients that I work with. I work with people, we coach people all over the world, and they very often feel like they are, need to either be on with work all the time, achieving, or, when in their time off, either serving their family or, just not taking time for themselves. People are sleep deprived. And I think of time management as the behaviors and the activities that fuel our energy and our brain power for peak performance in everything we're doing at work and at home with ourselves.
We got a tweet from Michael. My mom gave me the best and most direct resolution advice: finish everything you start. What are you doing to make 2019 different? How do you want to make the most out of your time, space, and energy? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. Have you discovered bullet journaling? We've got with us writer Carol. He is the creator of the bullet journal method. It's something that's taken off like pancakes on the internet. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but it's happening. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Our topic today is getting organized, getting focused for the new year, picking out those goals and figuring out how you can achieve them. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. If you need some ideas on how to get started on those big goals, give us a call. Ask our experts, 210-614-8980. Writer Carol is with us. He is the creator of the bullet journal method. And you say it's a way to track the past, order the present, and design the future. How does that work, writer?
Well, the first part is just creating a record of your day to day, right? Because what happens today will become the past very quickly. And once you get in the habit of doing that, you're creating a record of your life, of your experience. And it's one that you can study. You can look at it and see what worked, what didn't, what would I do differently next time? And in so doing, you are just, you're growing, you're developing. You can take those lessons and apply them to your future endeavors. And also, like, you're keeping a lot of lists, a lot of your task lists. And I like to look at them a little bit differently. So it's not just a bunch of stuff that I have to do. The way that I look at my task lists are like every one of those tasks is an experience that's waiting to be born. So in some ways, our to-do lists are kind of like a time machine. They allow us to glimpse the future that we're working towards. And a lot of times, the things that we're working on and the things that we want don't necessarily align. So the idea is that by curating your lists and making sure that you're working towards the things that you actually want, you can start to influence your future and not just appear there one day being like, how did I get here?
And what about including items that will, you know, benefit the community, benefit the family, as well as benefit the self, Ryder?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the idea is that you're focusing on your priorities. You're focusing on what adds value to your life, like your family, you know, like the things that you love, these add value to your life. So it's not just about focusing purely on your own life, but focusing on the things that you care about, which is a lot more inclusive, and trying to spend more time with the things that matter and less time with the things that don't. And I think we get so caught up in the rush of our own lives that balance gets thrown off really quickly. The nice thing about writing it down is that no matter how stressed you are or how distracted you get, you can always come back to the page and begin again. You know, it's not about being perfect. It's about making improvement, just a little bit of improvement every day that will compound over time.
Yeah, don't be obsessed with being perfect. I see a lot of videos on YouTube of people who, I'm going to do a bullet journal, and they do these really elaborate high art layouts, and they go, oh man, I don't want to do that. That's not me. And but I think it should just—it's like the first step if you're going to learn how to ice skate is fall down. Just get that out of the way, so that you can get on with the business of learning how to ice skate. Just forget—you know—falling down is just part of it. So you're going to mess up. My journals—they've got misnumbered pages and all this other kind of misspellings and scratchings out. But that's a working journal. Don't worry about making it look perfect, writer.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like we are obsessed with this idea of perfection. We put so much time and energy trying to be perfect that actually turns into worry and then self-doubt, and then we're actually making much less progress because we're not focusing on what actually matters. It's not about, for example, with the bullet journal, it's not necessarily about how pretty it is. It's about how effective it is. But what is the function of your bullet journal? What is it? What value can it add? How can it best serve you? And for some people, that looks very beautiful, right? They use it as a form of meditation in order to express themselves creatively. But that doesn't necessarily mean that's what you need it for, right? And figuring out how it can best serve you is a very big and important part of the practice. It's about learning what you need and learning what is effective in your own life. And that takes time and it takes practice and it changes all the time too. And being aware of that is really important so you don't rely on things that aren't really matching your current experience. You know, if you change jobs or all of a sudden you start a family, chances are you'll have different needs and different priorities, and figuring out how to best manage those. It's an ongoing process.
Got a tweet from Vivian. I have been using a bullet journal for the last 2 years. I love it. It's like a planner, a journal, and a to-do list in one. I love being able to revisit important events in my life and plan for the future. You know, the word workaholic, I hear people bragging about that all the time, but I'm a workaholic. You know, how did that happen, Julie Morgenstern, when people call themselves workaholics? Are they really workaholics? Do they need to take a close look at themselves?
Yeah, I mean, I think if someone's calling themselves a workaholic, very often it's probably true. It means that they're spending and investing a lot more time in work than they are in their personal lives. And I think the reason that people do that, though, is because they tend to be very accomplishment-oriented, and work is a place where you can check things off a list. The reward is, I got that done, I nailed that project, I completed a presentation, I got that promotion. The rewards for work well done tend to be very measurable. And people who are workaholics really thrive on those rewards, those very concrete rewards. And they feel bad taking time off. They're like, what do I do with myself? Because the rewards of time off and in a personal life, you can't check them off a list. It's more of a feeling. It's a feeling of well-being. It can be better energy. It can be closer connections. It can be getting more in touch with who you are as a human. And there's a hard-driving kind of work ethic that can be behind workaholism, which is my value is in my work. That is the value that I provide in the world. And if I'm not working, I'm not really adding value. So I think all of that can be, you can make adjustments for that. But I think understanding what is driving the workaholism so that you can start to make some adjustments and balance in a way that actually enables you to really perform incredibly well at work, but not having such an imbalanced life.
And then all that workaholic effort, you know, running like a hamster on the wheel, it's not exactly very productive. I think you say avoid email in the morning, because that's a time suck. Avoid time sucks.
Yes. I do think I think studies say that once you exceed about nine hours or so of work, you're just not efficient anymore. So the next 3 hours that you've spent working was probably worth about 20 minutes of effort, which is a complete waste. So you want to work smart and not hard at work. And one of the things that I have been teaching for a long time is to control your email habit and your screen time habits. And the best way to break that screen addiction is to completely avoid email for the first and last hour of every day. Wake up, the first thing you do should not be check your phone. In fact, you should probably change your alarm to an old-fashioned alarm and move your phone across the room. If you're worried somebody may call you in the middle of the night with an emergency, you'll hear it ring. But you should not wake up and check your email, and you should not be in bed on your phone before you go to sleep.
Yeah, a lot of people, the first thing they do when they wake up is do those snow angels in bed looking for the phone.
Yeah. Where's my phone? And what that does is it starts your day out in a purely reactive mode. Instead of waking up and focused on your goals and your hopes for the day or your task list for the day or your intentions for the day, the first thing you're doing is seeing what everybody else wants from you. And once we get into that reactive mode, it's really hard to turn it off. You're in on the rabbit, you know, the hamster wheels, you called it, for the rest of the day. And it's very, very, very hard to slow your brain down and step away from that. And we need to have non-screen time throughout our days. And breaking our screen addiction is probably one. If there was one resolution that would probably be the oil in the machine of almost every other resolution people have this year, whether you want to work out more, write a novel, be better at work, be more creative, whatever it is, if you broke your screen addiction, which is you would create the space, the physical space, the time, and the mental space to pursue all of your goals 100%. It's probably the best change you can make this year.
Well, a lot of people are multitasking with their screens, or I call it multi-slacking, because they're able to Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook all at the same time. And so they're twice as effective in getting nothing done.
Oh, yeah. Doing more in doing less and more time at a lower quality. Instead of more and less time, you're doing less and more time. And people feel, you feel like no project. Undivided attention is the single greatest gift that you can give any person or project or task in your life, including yourself. Undivided attention. But the key is these devices are addictive. They're designed to be addictive. And we have to pull away, not cut them off, because they also help us do all kinds of things in the world, but be in control of that technology and have time on and off and be mindful and conscious and thoughtful and create the space to think and use the whole of your brain and not just the little transactional part.
Right.
And I think breaking the habit is, people are sitting at dinner with each other and they are on their devices. And families are, the parents are on the devices, and then the parents say the kids are on the device, and everybody's on a device.
Left to their own self-devices. Let's take a break. We'll be right back. The number is 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay tuned. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. I am a big believer in goal setting and figuring out what's it going to take to achieve a really big goal. And at the start of the year is a time you can sit down and you can figure out, like, what is it that I want to get accomplished in 2019? Maybe every end of every year you have to do an assessment at your job. Think about, what do I want that assessment to look like? What do I want my boss or what do I want people to say about the work that I accomplished in this coming year? So write that assessment right now that you want to be given to you at the end of the year and figure out what's going to take for you to get there. And remind yourself and break it down into small chunks. Come up with a big project, something you've always wanted to do. It's achievable. All it takes is a little bit of focus and determination and to create systems that will keep you going when motivation falls short. Motivation is only a little spark, but creating a system that will remind you to go to the gym or how to get to the gym or how to get dressed for the gym or do all these things, put them in place and you'll find that it's not work, it's fun, and then it's your life and boom, you're enjoying all of it, better health, and better opportunities for you. The number to call in as we talk about getting organized for 2019, what are your plans? 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Ryder Carroll is the creator of the Bullet Journal Method. And it seems like part of what you do, Ryder, is you do help people create a very flexible way to create systems to keep them on track.
Yeah, I mean, My own interpretation of goals is a little bit different. I think they're very, very valuable. But chances are that a lot of the goals that we set are related to something that we haven't experienced yet or something that we don't have. We set that goal in order to make that experience, to actually live that reality. So a lot of the times when we set a goal, we're setting it when we're furthest from reality because everything that happens next allows us to learn. So for me, goals are there to help guide us. But I think it's really important also to allow ourselves to change course as we learn more about the goal. Like, do you really want to run that marathon or do you just want to have more energy? Like, as you learn, as you progress, I think it's really important that we refine our goals. Because if we stick to them like 100%, that can sometimes be the result. We lose our motivation because as we learn, we realize that doesn't really align with what we were interested in. It's like, oh, okay, now that I know something about this, what I'm actually interested in is a little bit to the side of that. So for me, I think it's important to get the flexibility and adjust our systems and to update what I really this far or, make sure that exercise becomes part of my everyday. That's actually what's nourishing me right now. That's what I actually wanted. I just didn't have the vocabulary or the knowledge yet to do that. And I think that a lot of times goals fail because we don't have motivation. And a lot of times we lose this motivation because we just don't believe in the goal anymore. It just doesn't resonate with us anymore. So I think it's really important to find what about that goal was, what was it that motivated you to begin with, and continue to refine your goal as you learn, as you progress.
And Julie Morgenstern, how important are goals, setting goals for people who want to become higher achievers?
Yeah, I think I want to sort of piggyback a little bit on what Ryder was saying and just say that I often encourage people to do that sort of reflection on what is the motivation for that goal. What is it that I'm really after when you set a concrete goal at the beginning? Because it can help motivate you to maintain the behavior. So if we go back to the exercise, which is such a common New Year's resolution, I'm going to get to the gym 3 times a week, or I'm going to take, you know, 4, you know, dance classes a week, or whatever it is. That's an activity. That is a behavior. The goal is what? Why do you want to do that? So very often the reason that people want to exercise more is either because they want to look better. There's the vanity one, which is probably the least easy to sustain, the easiest to ditch after a couple weeks, like, ah, whatever. But also it's either to, you know, I want to maintain my health, or I want to live long enough to see my grandkids. Those are very strong motivations. And the exercise is one way to get there. And then when it's, you know, I'm going to go to the gym 3 times a week, that's not my goal, that's the activity. When it's time, it's Thursday, and it's time to go to the gym, do I want to go to the gym? Not really. Do I want to live to see, you know, run around with my grandkids? Yes, I do. And you grab your bag and go. So seeing what's on the other side of the goal early on and using that and identifying that early, I have found can help you maintain your motivation because it connects you early to the goal. And then, as Ryder said, you may decide, you know, I hate going to the gym, but I still want to be able to keep up with my grandkids or, you know, have a lot of energy. So I'm going to change the way I'm going about that, and I'm going to start dancing around in my house, or I'm going to start parking my car at the outside of the parking lot from the store instead of close to the door. And I can build in that movement that will give me the goal, which is energy, in a different way. And that makes the behavior flexible, the actions flexible, but the goal and the motivation, which really comes from the depths of our soul, it's what we want for our lives.
That sure, but when constant. You say things like, I hate running, I hate going to the gym, decide to love running, decide to love going to the gym. There are people that do love to do this, and anyone can be one of them. And you can log about that, about how these fantastic moments of zen that you experience because you actually did this, and you focus on those positive moments and put aside the negative ones, and pretty soon you'll be looking forward to going to the gym. We know that from dopamine research that anticipation of an event is more important, is a higher deliverable of dopamine than actually accomplishing that thing, that goal in and of itself. So there are plenty of ways to hack yourself in order to do behaviors. You know, you may want to live long enough to see your grandchildren, but everyone wants to do that, but few people actually do the hard work to get to the gym. It's more about enjoying the moment and maximizing the effort through loving it. It seems to be that's a way to go about that. I'd love to hear Ryder Carroll's response.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really important, as was previously noted, to really distill your motivation. Like, what are you expecting out of your goal, right? And that's really important because a lot of times we set these expectations that we can't possibly meet, you know, like run a marathon. Like, when is it? 3 weeks from now. When's the last time you ran? I don't know. It's 3 years ago. I think we have to really balance what we are expecting with just our ability to show up, right? You know, like I think if we're dead set on reaching a certain goal, we kind of give up an opportunity to understand what it is that actually matters to us. You know, like what is our motivation? What do we expect in exchange for that goal, and kind of work backwards and then figure out opportunities to, you know, spend more time with that. Again, spend more time with our grandkids. I do think that it helps for us to change our narratives. You know, like I hate running. personally, I just got into running, and I'm one of those people who doesn't enjoy running. But I also note that after running, like the process of running is not enjoyable to me. But through, for the rest of the day, I feel much more calm and much more focused. And when I do, I take a moment to make a note of that, right? I spend a minute there and be like, ooh, this is exactly what I wanted from the beginning. Like, I've already hit my goal. This is what I wanted. So every time I'm in the gym and I'm not enjoying it or running somewhere and it's freezing cold out or something, I just take a moment to remember that. Like, that this is how I this is how I earned that moment.
Right. So know, really, and really quickly, that, Ryder, before we run out of time, I wonder if you can just a real quick, how do you get started with the bullet journal?
I think the easiest way would be to watch the 4-minute tutorial video on bulletjournal.com. But I think the first thing is to figure out what you want to get out of it and then start bullet journaling based on that. If it's artistic, that's one approach. If it's minimal, that's another approach. Try to understand how it can best serve you. Is it for organization? Is it for anxiety? You know, once you have defined your motivation, then you can start to build your practice from there.
And you don't need any special materials?
Not a thing. All you need is a notebook and a pen. Any notebook, any pen. And it's just about getting in the habit of decluttering your mind and writing down your thoughts. It's the simplest way to begin. And then build from there. See what works. You know, spend more time there. Leave behind what doesn't. But at all times, make sure that it's serving you. It's not about how it looks. It's about how it makes you feel.
And Julie Morgenstern, in about a minute, what can you tell people to help them have a more a better 2019?
I would just say identify what you want more time for in your life that you don't have enough time for right now, and build in a regular time in your day and your week that is carved out just for that, and then learn to practice using that time for the thing that you really want to spend your time on.
And do you think be fearless, dream big? Should that be part of it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you can see it, you can make it happen in most cases. And believe in your right to your dreams. You should believe in your right to your dreams. All you need to do is identify it and then create the space for it. Don't wait for life to give you the time. Take the time, bringing it back to what Ryder said. You have to take that time and claim it, and then practice using it until it feels like second nature, like brushing your teeth. And then you'll never give it up.
And in 30 seconds, Ryder Carroll, self-compassion, how big is that?
I think it's really important. You know, if you don't give yourself a break, then you spend most of your time and energy beating yourself up, and that does nobody any good.
All right.
You know,
I want to think.
Stronger.
Go ahead.
So the stronger we become, the better we can serve those around us. So we have to become as strong as we can be, and that begins with self-compassion.
Thank you so much. Ryder Carroll, best-selling author, and he is the creator of the Bullet Journal Method. Also with us is Julie Morgenstern. She's a best-selling author. Her book is Time to Parent, also Never Check Her Email in the Morning, among other books. She's an expert on time management, productivity, and organizing. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks so much for tuning us in.